It's Saturday, November the 4th, 2017. You're moving at the speed of creativity with Wesley Fryer, narrowcasting from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Well, good evening and welcome to a podcast from our GCamp OKC conference, which was a Google education focused conference held at my school, Cassidy School, where I am now the director of technology. And this is my third year and really, really excited to have a chance to organize this event. I think I will probably be posting on my blog about this in terms of different things that came together, but it really was a great day of learning. In large part because it's because of the folks in the room. We had some amazing, amazing teachers, 23 different presenters from not only across Oklahoma, but also across Kansas. There are currently 12 certified Google trainers in the state of Kansas, and four of those were with us today. And so they, along with others, just really provided some great opportunities to learn about Google tools. And, as I participated in different kinds of Google events, it really always seems like you're drinking from the fire hose. It can be so overwhelming, but there are always new tools and new possibilities, ways to do things that you haven't, learned or heard of before. And so it really was a nice day. We had, somewhere over 100, we had about 115 people registered. And we actually, I think, had some folks come, who were not originally registered that were walk-ups, some good folks from our school that went as well. And we had three breakout sessions in the morning, three in the afternoon, and then at 11 o'clock, we went to our theater for what we called a collaborative keynote of Google Glimpses. And these were designed to be short 2 to 3 minute shares of a Google tool or app. And I think that went well overall. I've seen demo slams done at other Google events, and sometimes I'll call it an app smackdown at a ed camp. But this session that I'm going to share now was in our closing sixth session, and it's I titled it Teaching and Learning in an AI First World. And as I'll talk about in the session, I've really been thinking a lot about what the Google CEO Sundar Pichai has been talking about over the last year, and that is Google's shift from a mobile first framework and perspective to an AI focused framework or an AI first focused framework. And so this is a session that gave me an opportunity to put some of those thoughts together, and I will include not only a link to the slides that have all the embedded videos that I shared in the presentation, but also links to some related articles and just, basically show notes for all of this. So if you would like to check out resources from our GCamp OKC, you can follow the hashtag GCamp OKC, but you can also go to the website gcampokc.org, and under the session grid tab, there is a link for resources 2017. And so we have a shared Google folder where presenters were invited to put a copy of their slideshow or Google Doc or a PDF of a website they used or whatever they were using to share resources. It's a good collection of those. So if you've got any feedback or comments for me after listening to this podcast, I would love to hear from you. You can reach out to me most easily by using Twitter. I am W. Fryer on Twitter. You're also, of course, invited to share a comment, which are a little bit rare and few and far between these days with blogs, but commenting still works, and so I would welcome any questions or comments that you might have. So without further ado, it is back to Cassidy School today at 3:30 p.m. for the start of Session 6, GCamp OKC, Teaching and Learning in an AI-First World. All right, well, welcome to Session 6, Teaching and Learning in an AI-First World. This is a bit of a different session. Probably a lot of the ones you've seen today have been, like, here's a tool, here's an extension, here's, a feature. And I wanted to do this session because, as we'll talk about, Google now believes we are not living in a mobile-first world, and they have been oriented towards mobile-first. Everybody with a smartphone, everybody, you know, more people getting access through a mobile device globally than anything else. And this last year, as we're going to see in a minute, Sundar Pichai, who's the CEO of Google, said, we're in an AI-first world. And so I do a Wednesday night web show and podcast with my friend Jason Neifer, who did that video in our keynote today. And so I've just been thinking a lot about this, and I thought, well, maybe I'll do a session about it and try to share some ideas. So I'm not going to pretend like I know all the answers, but I think there's some pretty big stuff to kind of chew on and think about, and I hope you kind of enjoy this, and then we'll, you know, share with me and with others your thoughts about what all this means, because there are big changes afoot, and we're just going to dive into them. If you'd like to access these slides, you can go to actually just my Twitter, W. Fryer, and I pinned that to the top. So if you're on Twitter, you can get it there. You can also go to the shortened link, wfryer.me/AI first. And that's going to jump you to this Google slideshow. And the videos and everything that I'll talk about are here. So, who here is an iPhone, like, loving person, and you're just like, has anybody gotten an iPhone 8, an iPhone 10, or, you know, are you going to? Who loves their iPhone? And I'll say I do. Okay. Who loves their Android? I know Glenn Emerson does. Glenn has you have a Pixel, don't you, Glenn? So, you're right, it's an interesting world. We've got all kinds of devices, and we've got different camps, as always, and we have lots of news media, probably more than even is warranted, every time Apple announces something new. Well, Google has their annual event, too, and it's called Google I.O., and it's a developer conference. Apple has one as well. It's called the Apple Developers Conference. Theirs happens in June. Google I.O. happens in May. And so amidst all the headlines about what's happening politically and, you know, and hurricanes, and there's all kinds of important things that have been going on, there's some things you may have missed. And so there were some big announcements at Google I.O., which weren't just products. They were also talking about the future and the present and our phones and our smart devices, which we're going to talk about. So I'm going to play a short little clip. Who recognizes him? He is? Do you know his name? Sundar Pichai. Okay, he is the CEO of Google. And you know, Google is now a sub-company of a bigger company called Alphabet. And so there are sub-parts of Alphabet, of which Google is one. And so in this little clip, which is about 2 minutes long, from May 2017, you're going to hear him talk about the shift from a mobile-first to an AI-first world. And if, like me, you hear him say this and you're like, what does that mean? That the whole company of Google is changing their focus. That's what this session is about, exploring what that means. Oops.
But computing is evolving again. We spoke last year about this important shift in computing from a mobile-first to an AI-first approach. Mobile made us reimagine every product we were working on. We had to take into account that the user interaction model had fundamentally changed with multi-touch, location, identity, payments, and so on. Similarly, in an AI-first world, we are rethinking all our products and applying machine learning and AI to solve user problems. And we are doing this across every one of our products. So today, if you use Google Search, we rank differently using machine learning. Or if you're using Google Maps, Street View automatically recognizes restaurant signs, street signs, using machine learning. Duo with video calling uses machine learning for low bandwidth situations. And Smart Reply and Allo last year had great reception. And so today, we are excited that we are rolling out Smart Reply to over 1 billion users of Gmail. It works really well. Here's a sample email. If you get an email like this, the machine learning systems learn to be conversational, and it can reply, I'm fine with Saturday or whatever. So it's really nice to see. Just like with every platform shift, how users interact with computing changes. Mobile brought multi-touch. We evolved beyond keyboard and mouse. Similarly, we now have voice and vision as two new important modalities for computing. Humans are interacting with computing in more natural and immersive ways.
Okay, voice and vision. How many of you talk to your phone now quite a bit when you are texting or, you know, getting something? Do you do this? Okay, I have done it a lot, you know, and I remember not long ago I've heard about, okay, not throwing anyone under the bus, but I've heard about there have been some Oklahoma superintendents that would still dictate to their administrative assistant because they weren't keyboarding, okay? And this is just in the last few years. And I thought, oh, how could you ever do that? And what do I find myself doing now, you know, saying, Siri, da-da-da, you know? When you talk to your spouse and you say, hi, honey, I love you, exclamation point, you've been talking to Siri, you know, too many times because, anyway. And there's errors and whatnot. But here's where we're going today. What is artificial intelligence? What is an AI-first world? And the big question, what does this mean for teaching and learning? And again, I won't pretend to have this answer, but just as calculators were a challenge, right, in the classroom, my dad at the Air Force Academy, he was teaching math there in 1972. He was part of a committee that looked at whether they should put the slide rule aside and have calculators or keep on slide rules. Any guesses what they decided? They kept the slide rule, you know, for another year. I mean, that was a big challenge and a big new technology. Today, with some of the things, and I'm glad Hazel's here, she's a Spanish teacher, you know, one of the things that they announced, and if we have time, I'll play you the video, is with Google Pixel 2, you can be having two people speaking different languages, and it will do real-time translation, just like Star Trek, you know, as far as being able to, I talk Swedish, you talk English, and, you know, we hear each other in our own language. So we're early days with some of this stuff, and so I'm not saying that today's session is going to change what you do Monday, but there's some really important things to grapple with and to think about, and it's actually great stuff to have our kids grapple with, right? Because we are growing up and living, we're kind of grown up, but we're still, you know, learning and growing in a very fast-changing environment. And some of what we're going to talk about with AlphaGo and AlphaGo Zero, which have just, well, won Go, the Go game and all, it's incredible. So, connecting the dots. All these terms, you know, Google, AI, machine learning, you heard Sundar Pichai talk about that. And curriculum, teaching, school, like how do these things connect? You know, you might say, Wes, I'm not teaching computer science, you know, why do these things gonna matter? But how many of you have either an Alexa or a Google Home or you use Siri? How many of us are doing that? Okay, so this is what Pichai is talking about there with changing our interface with technology. We're no longer just going to the keyboard and typing. We're increasingly using multi-touch, but that was mobile. That was old stuff. Now we're using our voice and the technology, the AI and what's in the cloud in a lot of cases is getting smarter. And so this is what we're going to try to do is connect the dots. So do you know these things? If we had more time, which we don't, just a 45-minute session, I would have you turn to your neighbor and talk about these things. Like what your knowledge is today about AlphaGo, about Deep Blue, about DeepMind. What is OpenAI? What is the singularity that some people have talked about? Who was Alan Turing? You know, those are all good terms that you're going to learn a little bit about in this session. Artificial intelligence. Wikipedia says artificial intelligence is any device that perceives its environment and takes actions that maximize its chance of success at some goal. So when I talk to Siri, what is Siri trying to do, at least initially, when I talk to her or him, depending on the voice? Personally, I like the Australian female. That's the one I... Yeah, trying to recognize my voice, right? So the first thing is, what is the input? What am I saying? And, you know, can I represent that well? Then Siri's taking that information and trying to do something with it. Have you had the experience of children, perhaps in your own car, trying to have a conversation with Siri, you know, like a multi-part conversation? She really can't do that yet. You know, you can't say, you know, Siri, what's the weather like today? And then if you had, you know, something that you wanted to ask, you know, to carry on a conversation, you have to ask separate questions. They can't be linked together. But this is further developing. Alan Turing was responsible, this is amazing, I don't know if you knew this, for shortening the war in Europe and by more than 2 years and probably saving 14 million lives. Now, how could he have done that? Well, he developed something at a place called Bletchley Park, which was called Ultra. And what did Ultra convert? Was the Nazis code, right? And it was the code breaking. And there's a great movie about him, and if you haven't seen that, It's amazing. It's incredible. But he's helped formulate the concept of algorithm and computation. And so the Turing machine is the test of intelligence that we've, one of them, to say, is this general purpose computer, you know, intelligent? And so, oh, this, do you use Adobe Spark? Have you all played with Adobe Spark video? This was a little movie trailer I made. You just take still images and then you put your voice. And so this is like a promo for our little podcast. And this is, Megan knows this. Everyone else may not. But this is Wes using very silly voices to make a little video.
In a world filled with artificial intelligence bots, anyone can wield algorithmic power beyond Alan Turing's wildest dreams. If you thought a graphing calculator was disruptive in the classroom, or marveled at the information Google puts at your fingertips, realize these are paltry capabilities compared to the power of machine learning and AI. How are we preparing students today to be ready for this new reality? How can we help citizens of all ages develop more sophisticated computational thinking skills? How can we make working with large data sets, applying complex algorithms, and addressing multivariate questions in classrooms as normal as sharpening a pencil? The answers, my friends, are waiting for you in the EdTech Situation Room web show and podcast. Streaming live on Wednesday nights in North America and available on demand everywhere finer podcasts are curated. Follow EdTechSR on Twitter. Download and subscribe to past shows on edtechsr.com. Stay safe and stay savvy.
I got the scariest music that Adobe Spark video had. So there you go. There's a shameless post or shameless plug for our show. But that was fun. Telling stories is important, actually. And I would like to help, you know, all of us open up our minds to what this means. Who is that guy in the picture up there? You recognize him? Important person for everyone to know.
Because I just read it.
That's right. His name is under it. Elon Musk. Okay. What are the? How did Elon Musk start with his money? What did he make?
Tesla or the space program.
PayPal. He started with PayPal and made millions of dollars. And then, Glenn said, he is with SpaceX. That's a company. Tesla is another company. Does anybody know the third big one? Actually, there's Solar City. Solar City. No, not Uber. Solar City. And they're making the largest battery, lithium battery factories in the entire world. They just signed a huge contract in China to make an enormous one. There's one outside of Reno, Nevada. Because that's a huge thing, keeping solar power back is batteries. But I didn't even put this in here, but do you know what Neuralink is? Neuralink is connecting our brains to the computers so that we'll be able to literally wire in and jack in, think the Matrix. I mean, this is what Musk is working on right now. One of Musk's fears is that artificial intelligence, who that are big people right now think that, have you ever watched The Terminator? You know what Skynet is, right? Skynet in the movie The Terminator is the bad AI that takes over the world. And when we talk about this, you know, that's what some people think are going to happen. Well, there are three really smart people that are prominent who think that is a real risk. Do you know any of those? I'll give you a hint. Musk is one. Do you know the other two? One of them is a astrophysicist who wrote a pretty big book, and Stephen Hawking, there's also a pretty amazing book about Stephen Hawking and his life. And then this guy just was the richest person in the world, and he was unseated by Mark Zuckerberg in the last year. Who's that?
Jobs.
No, good guess though, and you're along the right lines.
Microsoft.
Think Microsoft. Bill Gates. All right, so Bill Gates, Elon Musk, and Stephen Hawking are on the record saying they think that smart AIs pose a significant risk to humanity, and that if these technologies continue to advance beyond, you know, just without intervention, you know, we could be in a bad place. Musk is actually doing something about it, and so he has a whole initiative called OpenAI, because he says we shouldn't just have wealthy tech companies and large nations controlling artificial intelligence. So
those are all big ideas. And you may be thinking, Wes, what am I going to get out of this session that I can use tomorrow or today? Well, here it is. This is your little magic trick. Who's used the app Seeing AI? Do you know about this? This is actually a Microsoft app. Okay, so here you are at a Google event, hearing about a Microsoft thing, but it's okay. It's free on iTunes. It's called Seeing AI. And what it allows you to do is to have the app narrate the world around you. It's designed for the low vision community, and it's a research project that's harnessing the power of artificial intelligence to describe people, text, and objects. So I will show you a quick video about it, and you can download it and start to play with it.
Seeing AI is a Microsoft research project for people with visual impairments. The app narrates the world around you by turning the visual world into an audible experience. Point your phone's camera, select a channel, and hear a description. The app recognizes saved friends. Jenny, near top right, 3 feet away, describes the people around you, including their emotions. 28-year-old female wearing glasses, looking happy. It reads text out loud as it comes into view, like on an envelope. Ken Lawrence, P.O. Box, or a room entrance. Conference 2005. Or scan and read documents like books and letters. The app will guide you and recognize the text with its formatting. Top and left edge is not visible. Fold steady. Lease agreement. Disagreement. When paying with cash, the app identifies currency bills. $20. When looking for something in your pantry or at the store, use the barcode scanner with audio cues to help you find what you want. Campbell's tomato soup. When available, hear additional product details. Heated microwave full on height. And even hear descriptions of images in other apps like Twitter by importing them into Seeing AI. A close-up of Bill Gates. Finally, explore our experimental features like scene descriptions to get a glimpse of the future. I think it's a young girl throwing a frisbee in the park. Experience the world around you with the Seeing AI app from Microsoft.
Okay, now again, if we had more time, I would do a live demo. I did one of those at Cave 8, and we took the superintendent, and it said something really funny. I mean, it's not all, I think at the age, it was like, this is an 80-year-old man or something, you know.
Well, you did his wife first.
Right, that's right. And so, anyway, this...
We have to do it him because it guessed her.
This is coming along, but it is an app that you can have today, and you can show this to your students, and you can talk about this, because artificial intelligence is not something that is just, you know, science fiction and long time away. Like, it is happening right now with the assistance that we are, many of us, putting in our homes, and with technologies that are all around us, like surveillance cameras, actually, which I'll touch on a little bit in this. So why is artificial intelligence such a big deal, and what is it? Again, if you have an Alexa, if you use Siri, if you use a Google Home, then you are already using artificial intelligence. Now, that artificial intelligence isn't just on your device, it's in the cloud, right? It's connecting to the internet. So if you don't have internet connectivity, you're really not able to do any of this stuff. And that's part of the reason why these companies are investing so heavily in internet connectivity and being able to connect the world, because they want to sell their services. And one of the interesting things is, why does Google want us all to be connected? How do they make their money?
Advertising,
right? And we need kids to know this. Quick aside, but over our fall break a couple weeks ago, I saw my 17-year-old daughter tapping on this quiz on this website. And I was like, honey, you know they're tracking you, right? And she's like, that's just a quiz, Dad. I'm saying, I know, sweetie, but what they're doing is they're taking that information and then they're going to show you ads based on your personality and your, you know, likes, dislikes and stuff. And she's like, really? Yeah. So, you know, we need to know that about these companies. You know, we're talking about Google and excited, but you know, there probably should be a limit on how much information people track and sell about us, and I won't go down that road a long way, but that is Google's way of making money, okay? What is Amazon? Amazon wants us all to be connected and all have a device that we can, like, order our toilet paper and, you know, our fridge can say, oh, Wes, you're out of milk, and, you know, let us deliver it to your house. Will you let us come in your house? I mean, that's something they've just been working on, right, is ways that open up your house and be able to, you know, bring products. How does it
clear out to my house to deliver milk? Hell yes.
Yeah, and it's going to come on a drone. And it's going to come on a drone. And that is coming now. That technology is being developed now. Because what does Amazon do? What's their way of making money?
Free two-day shipping.
To sell you stuff, right? They want to sell you everything. Okay, Walmart does too. What about Apple? Apple's different. What does Apple want to sell you? Hardware. So this is what's interesting is, you know, when you look at the big companies, and Microsoft is in there too. they're profitable in different ways. And so some people have read, I just read an article this last week that said the phones, if what makes the phones, well, if the phenomenon we use to describe phones getting faster, which is called Moore's Law, slows down, more and more of the value is going to come from this. It's going to come from the cloud. It's going to come from AI. So, you know, it's a big race between Google and Apple on phones and things. And how many of you have tried to explore what a Google Home or an Alexa can do? Have you played with that? Okay, a few. I think it'd be fun, I haven't actually told any teachers at our school this, to have one or an Alexa with kids and to help, because this is improving all the time, right? How much, what can you learn, right? There's so much that we can do now with Google, but now with your voice, you know, what are the things that we can figure out and kind of mapping this? Because if you go to this website on the Made by Google, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that it can do. And I know my friend Jason, well, actually Michelle Freeland, who's our librarian, middle and lower division librarian, I think they're using their Alexa for their shopping list, and they're saying, hey, add milk, add such and such. But it's going beyond that. We're at the very early days of this, but this is exploding, and it's actually kind of shocking how quickly this is changing. All right, let's talk about jobs quickly. This is a map of the most popular job or the most prevalent job in all U.S. states in 2014. What is it for Oklahoma? Truck driving. Okay, it is actually for the state of Maine, too. In fact, I think 34 states, truck driving is the number one most common job. Because guess what? You don't have to have a college degree to be a truck driver, and you can earn a relatively middle-income wage, although I think it's pretty hard to be away from your family and all this. Truck driving, it's a big deal. Well, what's happening right now with self-driving vehicles? Is this a, like, fad? Is this, like, fake news?
No.
No, this is happening. And so this is an LA Times article from September saying robots could replace 1.7 million American truckers in the next decade. This is maybe the most scary picture I've seen, which that looks kind of creepy. But that's from The Verge on July 5th, 2017. This self-driving truck has no room for a human driver, literally. Now, are there still going to be some truck drivers? Sure, especially last mile. But, I mean, have you driven to California on I-40? There's not a lot of turns, right? And there's not a lot of tricks. And so these cars are becoming incredibly sophisticated, and they're applying this to trucks. And this is happening, right? Because economics is going to say trucking companies and all these supply chains are going to continue to try to save costs. So does anybody here have a Tesla? Have you ridden in one before? I've sat in one. I went to Menlo Park to their, you know, facility. They have the actual one from the first Iron Man movie that was in there. It's black, and you can check it out. We have some parents that have Teslas. I'd love to have a Model 3. Of course, I'd love to have a Model S, but that's not going to happen anytime soon. But the Model 3 is the, whatever, $30,000, you know, it's the one they're making for consumers. So Tesla is very advanced with their autopilot. The technology they have today in their cars can do autopilot. You know, it's just that they haven't turned it on fully yet. And the ability for vehicles to have sensing, and this one isn't a YouTube video, so I've got to pop out of my presentation to play it. But this is a Vimeo video, and what I just want you to notice, okay, the person in the driver's seat is there for legal reasons. He's not doing any driving himself. Look at the way in which the technology is sensing, and this is sped up, obviously, is sensing all of these different things and making decisions. And while this is creepy on one level, man, it's also kind of exciting. How many people die on United States roads a year in auto accidents? Do you know?
For our children, it's very high.
Yeah, like it's a large number. It's like tens of thousands of people. I should have that statistic at my fingertips. We could ask Siri, right? I wonder if Siri could actually answer that. She'll probably Google it. That's one thing.
Yeah,
Siri does more. The Google assistants, and this is it, right? Because I think, this is the Wes Fryer prediction, that Google and Amazon are going to beat Apple in this, because I don't think Apple's getting the data, especially that Google has, to be able to win.
I would have a Google Pixel today if I had not talked my husband into getting one of these. Now I can't change him.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting question about would you change, you know, what would it take to get you to change?
1.3 million people die every year.
But that, would that be globally probably then? That's probably a global number. Huh. So anyway, that's a great thing to do with your kids too, right? Because then you need to ask, well, what is that source? Where did that come from? What was that study? Was the, you know.
That's gotta be in the world.
I think that must be a global number. Anybody here like to play chess? When's the last time you sat down and played a nice chess game? Do you have time to do that? I have one of the professors I worked with at Texas Tech when we lived in Lubbock had a chess set in his room, or his room in his office. And I was like, man, we should sit down and play chess. We never had time to do this. Well, another name you may have heard before is Garry Kasparov. Okay, Garry Kasparov was defeated in 1996 by an IBM computer called Deep Blue. Okay, Kasparov is and was a world champion. 1996. How many years ago? 21. Okay. What's been going on lately with this? Do you know? Have you caught this news amidst everything else? Well, here we go. Who's ever played this game? Go. It's amazing. It's kind of like Pente. Pente is a game that we played in, you know, growing up in school. And then I had a friend in college who really liked Go. So Go has been played since probably 1046 BC. It's played with two different colors of stones, basically. And it's the oldest board game continuously played today. Okay, it's over 2,500 years old. Relatively simple rules. But check this out. In terms of complexity, if you were going to work with a computer, even if it was doing 10 operations to assess the value of one play of a stone, this computer in March of 2014 would take 4 hours to assess all possible combinations of the next moves. In other words, this is an incredibly complicated game. And to get the computer to figure out what's the best move is really, really hard. So what has just happened in the last few months? Well, AlphaGo is a computer that a Google company called DeepMind developed. And back in, I think it was March, they first had a defeat of one of the world-class players. This isn't that big of a deal in North America, right? Bedlam's happening today, football, right? But in Japan, in China, in East Asia, like, they have professionals that do nothing at school but learn how to play this game, and they play it professionally. So this was televised and live streamed on the web, and we had a huge defeat. March 12th. This was 2016.
Machine has triumphed over man in the complicated board game Go. While the man is one of the world's top players, he proved no match for a computer, though a human was required to put its chosen moves into practice. Losing 3-0 in a best-of-five contest in Seoul, Lee Sedol was consoled by Google subsidiary DeepMind behind the AlphaGo program.
AlphaGo can compute tens of thousands of positions per second. But what's really incredible is that Lee Sedol can compete with that just with the power of his mind and ingenuity and stretched AlphaGo to its limit in the last three games.
The computer program sought to approximate human intuition in tackling the game, popular in countries like China, South Korea, and Japan, in which contestants move stones on a square grid with the aim of seizing the most territory.
This was March of 2016, and he was being really kind to him, but he was defeated 3-0, and this was a shock. I mean, huge shockwave. Oh my gosh, this can happen. It took months and months and months, and they used human beings and human moves in order to get the AlphaGo computer to be able to get to this level, but it was able to do this a year ago. That's a year ago. What just happened in May of 2017? Google's AlphaGo AI won a three-match series against the world's best Go player. And so this was another defeat that was a little bit... It was another decisive defeat against a top player. October 20th, 2017. What's today? November 4th. Okay, so this is like in the last 2 weeks. They have an AI now that was called AlphaGo Zero. Rather than compete against human players, it just competed against itself. Rather than taking months to develop to this point, it took 3 days. And it defeated the top player, I think it said 100-1. I've got a video about this. This is stunning.
AlphaGo Zero is the strongest Go program in the world. It outperformed all previous versions of AlphaGo. Specifically, it defeated the version of AlphaGo that won against the world champion Lee Sedol and it beat that version of AlphaGo by 100 games to 0.
100 to 1, it defeated it.
So all previous versions of AlphaGo started by training from human data. And they were told, well, in this position, the human expert played this particular move, and in this other position, the human expert played here. AlphaGo 0 doesn't use any human data whatsoever. Instead, what it has to do is learn for itself, completely from self-play. So the reason that playing against itself enables it to do so much better than using strong human data is that, first of all, AlphaGo always has an opponent of just the right level. So it starts off extremely naive, it starts off with completely random play, and yet at every step of the learning process, it has an opponent, a sparring partner, if you like, that's exactly calibrated to its current level of performance. And to begin with, these players are very, very weak, but over time they become progressively stronger and stronger and stronger. People tend to assume that machine learning is all about big data and massive amounts of computation. But actually what we saw in AlphaGo 0 is that algorithms matter much more than either compute or data availability. In fact, in AlphaGo 0, we use more than an order of magnitude less computation than we used in previous versions of AlphaGo, and yet it was able to perform at a much higher level due to using much more principled algorithms than we had before. I think I can speak for the team by saying that we were all pleasantly surprised by just how far it went, that eventually it was able to surpass all of our expectations, and it was able to actually climb up the ratings until after around 40 days, we found that it had actually defeated all previous versions of AlphaGo to become the strongest Go program in the world. And this is all for a system that's been trained completely from scratch, starting from random behavior and progressing from first principles to really discover tabula rasa how to play the game of Go.
Now, what they didn't say in that video, and I think is in some graphs, is just showing how fast it learned. I mean, it's just incredible. All right, one more video, and then let's... It's mind-blowing. I mean, folks, this is mind-blowing. Like, this is, you are not hearing this on the news and the press. This is incredible. Now, I'm not saying it's meaning Skynet. I'm not saying that it's going to take over tomorrow. And I've watched some interesting sci-fi movies about it. But this is a really big deal that's improving far more quickly. If you think about how long it took us for the CD to replace the cassette, or for the DVD to replace the VHS, or for Netflix, I mean, that's been taking a while. This stuff is happening really quick. I got one more video, and then I'll throw out some ideas about maybe what we could do in school. Because there are important things besides talking about this with kids that we can do with this. So this is Google Pixel Buds. And so this is an Engadget article from, it says a day ago, from October 4th. So this was last month, actually exactly 30 days ago, after Google announced this. A babblefish that doesn't feed on brainwave energy. So who's seen this before? Did y'all see this in the Google demo? Nope. Okay, this is pretty cool. Swedish and English.
Pixel Buds work great with Pixel. They even give you access to a new real-time translation experience. It's an incredible application of Google Translate powered by machine learning that's like having a personal translator by your side. To show you how easy this experience is, I'd like to invite Isabel back on stage for a conversation in her native language, Swedish. So, Isabel is going to speak Swedish into her Pixel Buds, and I'll hear the English translation out of Pixel 2's front speakers. And then I'll respond in English, and she'll hear the Swedish translation in her Pixel Buds. To illustrate this today, you'll hear both sides of the conversation. Hey Isabel. How's it going?
Hey Isabel, hur är läget?
Helt okej, tack.
Absolutely okay, thank you.
What do you think of these cool new headphones?
Vad tycker du om de här coola nya hörlurarna?
Mitt team designade dem, så jag tycker de är ganska coola.
My team designed them, so I think they're pretty cool.
Okay. So while you're up here, what color should I get?
Medan du är här, vilken färg ska jag välja?
Jag tror ganska blå skulle passa dig. Jag tror jag drar nu. Publiken vill nog se några fler nya grejer.
The idea is that we use one song that two
Thank you.
They both, and that one, had their own Pixel phones. So they both had a Pixel 2, and they were able to do that. And right now, it's just like a Pixel 2 thing, and it's not an app on other devices. But that technology, like we've seen with other things, is going to come and share. To share a quick story from school, you know, one of the first things I remember being challenged by coming here 2 years ago as a technology director is some teachers in our language department saying, can we please turn Google Translate off for everyone in Google? You know, because they didn't want that coming up in the lab. And so we ended up compromising where it doesn't automatically come up, but you could still go to it and use it. In the same way that a calculator was challenging, like, okay, when do you get to use a calculator? Like, when do you get to use that? Because you got to know your times tables. You know, at some point, we're going to be out in the world, you know, and so having access to a calculator and using it, and this is, I think, in the same thread of discussions, like, what is... You know, what does this mean for my kids? Am I still, you know, we're still going to need to learn a language, if we want to, you know, but will we actually? I don't know. There's a lot of interesting discussions to have. One more little application. It's not a video, but how many of you use Google Photos? I have switched now to sharing all my photos into Google. I still use Flickr, which is YouTube's. 1.2 billion photos and videos are uploaded a day. Okay, and that's as of Google I.O. in May. And so what this means is a lot of things. Back in November in Enid last year, so a year ago, I had a chance to do another TEDx talk. I did one at OU about 4 years ago. This one I called it Digital Citizenship and the Surveillance State. Because one of the things, and we go to the movies and you see Ghost in the Shell and these other things, you're like, the camera's on and it's identifying, you know, who's who, and oh, look at Wes, and he's on the watch list. Ooh, he was, you know. That kind of technology, I mean, they say DARPA and the Defense Department is 10 to 20 years ahead of where we are with consumer technology. What does the new iPhone 10 do? How do you open it? Doesn't do Touch ID. How does it turn on? Yeah, facial recognition. And so there's these different issues that this raises. But here's kind of the we'll summarize here in our last 8 minutes. We are moving to an, I think, I agree with Pachai, alright? We are moving to an AI first world, because I really do think these technologies, and that was on the OpenAI's website, they say this technology has more potential to change the world than any other technology before. Moving into an AI first world, it's gonna mean that we have access to mind-blowing computational and algorithmic capabilities via cloud-connected devices, 24/7. Perhaps we shouldn't be planning to be truck drivers for an entire career, right? Perhaps our state, along with 34 other states, that's the number one job, should right now be thinking about retraining and how we're going to equip folks that are making their middle-level income with truck driving, because we're still going to have jobs in the truck industry. They're just going to look different. And guess what? They're probably going to require, if not a college degree, at least a lot of computational skills to be able to work with code and to be able to work with the systems that are going to run those trucks. So this is the article I mentioned from last week from Business Insider that says, essentially, Google and Amazon are going to win and beat Apple because gadgets are undergoing a big change. And so access to AI and cloud computing is really going to start defining smartphones more so than it ever has. So here are my quick little suggestions of what do we do about this. And I've got a specific book to recommend to you and a TED Talk and kind of some homework if you want to kind of take that on. How many of you have heard of this term computational thinking? You've heard people talk about this, all right? This is different than, and I love art, and I love STEAM, and Megan and I get to collaborate on a STEAM studio, projects. But, you know, when you are drawing a picture or making a sculpture or doing some kind of an art, the feedback is different than if I'm making a robot that I want to have pick up an orange or I want it to go across the table. You know, that robot, like, does it do that or not? There's a feedback loop there. And so artistic design comes into this big time, right? The design of your smartphone and the design of new phones and everything, it's very, you know, it's not what, left brain is analytic, right? Right brain? Or although is that even correct? Yeah. So, I mean, it involves both. But computational thinking, that's a great term to look at and think about how that fits in, because we need to develop this capacity and encourage this capacity in our students. We need to create algorithms. Right now, there's a lot of programs that are just, we're using them, but we don't see inside them. The Facebook news feed is an example, right, that had a huge impact on our election, and we're getting more and more information about how You know, I think the Russians did hack and subvert democracy in the United States through what, you know, they didn't want Hillary Clinton to be elected, and they were able to be successful in that. So that has some pretty big implications for us as a society. If we think about citizenship, right, we've always thought about that with school. Like, part of what we do is prepare citizens. We need our leaders who are elected to be informed about this. We need our kids and others who are, you know, moving into the world to know about algorithms and to have some literacy when it comes to this stuff. I think we need to help students analyze data and visualize data. How many of you went to a Google Maps session today? Saw something about maps, okay? There's some ways of visualizing things spatially with maps. Encouraging connected learning, which we've done at this conference, right? That's a big part of this, saying be connected, get connected with other teachers who are learning and doing this. And then I think supporting creativity and innovation. You know, it's really easy to teach kids to do homework well and not necessarily think out of the box or be creative. And I really think we need to make that something that we talk about a lot, and then we do it. And in school, instead of Madeline Hunter's lesson plan, I like this. Design, create, and share. And I've made a website with Shelley to start, you know, sharing this. And hopefully we'll write a book about this someday. Design a lesson that you want your kids to have some kind of experience and learn something. Then let them create. Invite them to create something and then share it back. Because that's different than just turning in that assignment to you and then, you know, throwing that away or having the kid throw it away. Here are some tools. How many of you know about Scratch? You've used Scratch? Okay, Scratch is a wonderful, I think there's over 8 million projects. It's 6 years old now. Scratch Days in the spring, go to a Scratch Day. Host a Scratch Day. PBS has one for littles, for young kids, called PBS Scratch Junior. My wife has just been teaching, and still is, a little after-school class where the kids are learning to tell stories, but they're programming. They're coding with blocks. It's like Lego bricks, and they're learning to be computational thinkers. Encourage students to solve real problems and not just complete homework. Okay, this is really important because these kids are going to have to solve problems that we've never encountered before. But guess what? They may have access to AIs and more powerful technology than we've ever had before. So in terms of math, this is a great guy to tell your math teachers about. Dan Meyer, I don't know if you're familiar. I'm going to actually be sharing this with our math teachers here. And Dan says we need to be taking math problems, and I'm not going to play you his TED Talk, but basically real problems, instead of problems that, you know, all of the unknowns and all of the givens, you know, let's take a real thing like, how long is it going to take us to drain this water tank? You know, this is a great TED Talk. Every math teacher should see this, and we need to help shift what we're doing in math specifically, and other content areas as well. He has all of these lessons that are phenomenal, and they follow this three-step process of where you're telling a story, giving kids limited information, and asking a simple question. Oh, but guess what you have and use to solve the problem? Math. And he says, instead of making the conversation support the math should support the conversation. And it totally changes the engagement of kids who may have been, you know, very disengaged from math and thinking they can't even do it. And so that's an awesome thing to share. Last little recommendation. Who has heard of this guy, Mitch Resnick? I recently bought this book, and I've just started it. The book is called Lifelong Kindergarten, Cultivating Creativity Through Projects, Passion, Peers, and Play. And so Dr. Resnick is at MIT. He's at the Lifelong Kindergarten Group. That's the name of the group he works with. And he is sort of the founder of Scratch and that whole operating system. This is a great book. And in fact, right now, they're running a free online course. It's called a MOOC, Massive Online Open Course, M-O-O-C. And they're in the middle of it. And I didn't start it. I got a few other things going on, right? But I'm going to jump in to learn a little bit more about this, because there are other educators like you and me who care about these issues and who want to see creativity and innovation and, there's the bell, you know, change happen in education, not just to make the process more efficient of what we've always done, but to encourage kids to be innovators and to think outside the box and to design and to, you know, tinker and to play and to be able to thrive, right? Because if you simply have the skills of 10 years ago, 20 years ago, it's going to be a hard world. And unfortunately, you know, I don't know what's going to happen when all these truck drivers don't have jobs. I really don't. But we're going to need to figure out what we're going to do, right, as a society and then for our families and the kids that we work with. So right now, I took this screenshot two nights ago. They're on week three. This is a six-week class. They're on passion, and you can see it started with the introduction. So projects, passion, peers, and plays, and then creative society. Totally free, and there's excerpts of the book that they share as part of the class. So highly recommend that. And follow him on Twitter, Mitch Resnick. He's M-Res, M-R-E-S. And so he's like been on NPR in the last week, you know, talking about his book, and they're really talking a lot about it. And so he's putting out videos and other content from his book. So I will not play the video because we're going to have to go, but I hope that this session perhaps has helped us connect some dots, all right? There are some important things happening around us. You know, you may or you may have someone in your family, maybe for Thanksgiving this year, you know, you can like survey and ask, hey, who's got an Alexa? Who's got a Google Home? You know, and even thinking about that, like, do you think they're recording everything, you know, surveillance? This is going to become more and more normal in our society. And I don't know if you're a Star Trek fan. My wife is. But how, in Star Trek, well, who do they talk to? Like, do they pick up the Google Home and say, hey, Google, what?
They say computer.
Yeah, they talk to the room and they say computer. And this is the future that we're moving to is a, with a smart home, is we're going to be talking to our home saying, computer, lock all, or, you know, house, lock all my doors, house, start my coffee, house, preheat the oven to 450. And, you know, how quickly and or slowly we get there is going to depend a lot on choices that we make. But hopefully this has helped connect a few dots, and I wish you well, safe travels as you head out to wherever you're going next, and let me know what you end up thinking about, talking about, and especially if you take some of this with kids, right? Because this presentation has some great videos, and you could, you know, show these to kids and have them talk about it. What do they think this means? Because this is the world they're growing up into, just like we are.
Moving at the Speed of Creativity podcast are independently produced by Wesley Fryer and are licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Only license. Learn more at www.speedofcreativity.org.